Welcome to the HJ Talks About Abuse podcast. In this podcast, we talk about sexual abuse cases in the hope it will assist listeners in openly discussing topics which have been ignored for too long. This podcast is brought to you by the abuse team at Hugh James. We are lawyers, so we do tend to speak about the legal aspects of abuse cases, but we aren't too shy to speak up about the broader issues faced by survivors too. Hello, podcast listeners. Thanks for tuning in this morning on what is a very important day in terms of child abuse litigation, and I'll explain why. But first, to introduce ourselves, I'm here with Alan Collins.
Hello, everyone.
Who is a partner here at Hugh James in the abuse team. Now, we've got a fair bit of news today to go over, very importantly, and a lot of lawyers and survivors alike have been waiting with bated breath for the Supreme Court to hand down their decision in the case of CN and Poole Borough Council. Now, this has been about a year in the making, Alan, is it?
Well, actually, it's a bit longer, I think, because the Supreme Court heard the case last July, that's July 2018. This was on an appeal from the Court of Appeal. The claimants had appealed the Court of Appeal decision, but the case had been in the High Court some time before that, and that High Court decision was appealed up to the Court of Appeal by the defendants. The defendants succeeded in the Court of Appeal, so the claimants appealed from the Court of Appeal to the Supreme Court. And here we are now looking at the Supreme Court's decision.
Exactly, 1 year later, and everybody's been waiting for this. Look, there's a lot of ramifications from this decision, and we'll go through those today. To start out, what I'll do is introduce what the case was actually about. What happened was two children sought damages for harm they suffered whilst living in a house provided by Poole Borough Council. They were subjected to persistent antisocial behaviour on the part of a neighbouring family. And it was several years before the council rehoused the children and their parents, but in the meantime, they suffered physical and psychiatric harm. So as a result of that, they sought compensation from the council. Now, under the Children's Act 1989, they were deemed, basically, they were children on the radar of the council. They knew about these children. So the case was brought against the council saying that there was a breach of a duty of care that was owed to these children. And the case was defended on the basis that there wasn't a duty of care owed. Now, I think the best way to start this out and the simplest way is to explain in the simplest possible terms what a common law duty of care means.
I'd like to know too.
Well, I'll give it my best shot to put it down as simply as possible. So a common law duty of care is the first limb that's required to establish a claim in negligence. So this is different than a duty of care which arises by statute, by legislation. It's been found by the Supreme Court in this decision that there is not a duty of care that arises out of those sections of the Children's Act which the case was brought under. So the question is, does a common law duty of care arise? Now, a common law duty of care requires the defendant, which is in this case the council, to take proper care to avoid causing injury to the claimant. So there are some recognised relationships which give rise to a common law duty of care. So that's, for example, a solicitor and a client, doctor-patient, those kind of relationships. Given that there's precedent, that means there's cases in the past that have established a duty of care is owed there. You know, no-brainer, when you bring a case, there's a duty of care in that circumstance. The question is, in relation to the council and children who aren't on a care order but are known to the council to be at risk, is there a duty of care there? That's what this case deals with. And the case is essentially saying that we need to look at whether that duty of care exists. The question is, does it fit in with the mold of how a duty of care arises in different cases in the past? So the question there at the end is, does a public body like the council come under a duty of care in respect of those children? And the claimants in this case have failed to establish that in respect of their facts, but the Supreme Court has found that a duty of care can exist in those circumstances, but there has to be certain other factors at play, like an assumption of responsibility. This is all very difficult in certain ways to comprehend, and the case is very detailed. I'm going to pass it over to Alan to have a chat about his view on all of this and hopefully explain it as well.
Well, thank you for giving me the hard bit to try and explain and discuss with you, Sam. And I thought I was just going to sit back here and sort of just listen and be educated. Anyway, so The Supreme Court has ruled that, as I see it, local authorities do not owe this common law duty of care merely because they have statutory duties to protect a child from harm. So Parliament has gone and said what social services have to do in certain situations and what their responsibilities are. So you have the Children's Act 1989, and there are other pieces of legislation which stipulate what social services are supposed to do, what their responsibilities are, and so on. So the Supreme Court has said, well, just because there are these acts of Parliament saying local authorities must do X, Y, Z, that's not enough. But nevertheless, social services can come under this common law duty of care to protect a child where, for example, the social workers have created the source of the danger or assumed a responsibility to protect that child from harm. And as you've just said, Sam, in this particular case, the Supreme Court have said the council were not liable because it had not taken the children into care or assumed responsibility for their care or accepted any responsibility for their safety. Now, all that sounds rather contradictory, it seems to me. So I think we need to see what in practice some of this means. We all know, don't we, that employers can be responsible for the sins and misdeeds of their employees in certain situations. So if you're making a cup of tea, Sam, in the office, and you go and spill the tea over a colleague and they get scalded, then my firm would be liable in vicarious liability for the harm that you've gone and caused for you being careless in making the tea. So that's a very simple example, and that law applies to local authorities and social workers. There's no difference. But the Supreme Court is saying that for social workers to be liable, rather the local authority to perhaps to be vicariously liable for the social workers, there has to be this assumption of responsibility to perform a function with reasonable care. Such a responsibility might exist where there's a particular task to be undertaken which will have to be performed with reasonable care. So let's try and think of an example. And you've already talked about children coming across social services radar. And it seems to me that that in itself is not enough if that child goes on to be harmed. I think there has to be recognition that the child is at risk. And so the social workers put the child on the at-risk register, which is something that they're required to do under the legislation. But then let us say that they don't monitor the child properly or adequately, having placed him or her on the register, and the child then goes on and suffers abuse as a result of not being monitored adequately. I think the Supreme Court is saying, well, in that case, the local authority could well be negligent.
Yeah. What we're talking about here is where the authority has created the source of danger or assumed a responsibility to protect a claimant from harm or the child from harm. So exactly what you're talking about there, Alan, I think illustrates it well, where they've taken steps to remove the risk of harm or change the circumstances in which the children are being brought up, etc. But in taking those steps, they've done it negligently and that has caused harm to the child. We need to see the assumption of responsibility or the creation of a source of danger.
I think, and thinking aloud now, that if we get back to this particular case of Poole Borough Council, the social workers obviously realised that the children were in need, that the social workers were allocated to the children. So it seems to me that maybe had the children been placed on the at-risk register and the social workers then didn't follow through, then maybe the outcome would have been a bit different. I think simply because the children were recognised as children being in need and the social workers knew that this family next door were causing immense problems, the Supreme Court was saying that wasn't enough. There was this no assumption of responsibility. I think many of our listeners would think that's very unfair, although the point needs to be made, of course, that there was no criticism of the children's parents. The parents were loving and good parents, it seems. It was an unfortunate set of circumstances, and maybe the argument ought to have been that the entire family should have been moved away. It wasn't a case of arguing that the social workers should have removed the children from their loving parents because of these horrible neighbours next door. It should have been the argument, well, maybe the whole family should have been moved. Anyway, that's me thinking aloud here, trying to see how this case could have worked out differently.
Yeah, exactly. I think you raise a really important point in relation to the children being removed from the care of their parents. That was probably the unfortunate set of facts that this case was originally premised on, and the reason why it didn't necessarily succeed at the Court of Appeal or indeed at the Supreme Court. Taking children away from their parents is obviously an extremely serious step. You are depriving parents of being able to bring up their own children and the children remaining in the care of seemingly loving parents. Now, removing that relationship has to be obviously in circumstances where there is significant danger to the child. And it seems that in this case, it wasn't necessarily the parents that posed that risk or danger. It was the next door neighbors. And as you say, Alan, perhaps that should have resulted in the entire family being moved. Moving on a bit, I think the impact of this decision is obviously very welcome. You know, 6 months ago, a lot of people who had claims against a council where they weren't on a care order, but they were known to the council and the council hadn't appropriately taken steps to remove them from harm. So, for example, if they were on the at-risk register and they ended up being harmed because of some negligent step by social workers, 6 weeks ago, they probably didn't have a case because of the Court of Appeal decision. As far as my reading of it, today, there's an arguable case there as long as you could prove there was an assumed responsibility or if steps had been taken that increased the risk of danger. So I think that is quite welcome in terms of just clarifying that part of the law. What do you think, Alan?
Yes, I think so. I agree with you, Sam. The case isn't a green light, so to speak, for all those abused tragically when they were on social services radar. But it is certainly, in my opinion and my reading of the judgment, a green light for those where social services had assumed some kind of responsibility for the children, for the child concerned. So those cases that have been treading water for some considerable time now as a result of the Court of Appeals decision should see their cases hopefully now being progressed. I would say that because we live in increasingly complex times, I would anticipate that there will be cases in the future where the boundaries in negligence are pushed even further. It's interesting that all the major cases of late involving the law of negligence seem to revolve around child abuse. When are bodies, statutory bodies or charities, employers and the like, responsible for abuse committed by others? And all those cases have become leading cases which have really pushed the boundaries of negligence, for example, in the area of vicarious liability. And so I would not be surprised if in years to come the Supreme Court is asked again to revisit this case of Poole Borough Council, because I'm sure there will be situations that arise in the future where there'll be arguments over when social services owe a duty of care and when they do not.
Absolutely. Different situations that come to light on new sets of facts could obviously lead to this being tested again or indeed brought under a different sort of framework. And that's largely representative of how the law of negligence works here in England, in that duties of care are established incrementally through the court system outside of those situations that are already set out quite readily by previous cases, as I was saying, solicitor client, for example.
I also envisage that this question of is there a duty of care as a result of a statutory obligation question coming back in front of the Supreme Court again, because arguably, if Parliament says social services must do X and social services don't do X and a child gets harmed as a consequence, why shouldn't social services be then liable for the harm that has resulted from its failure to do X? I think that's a very important policy question, and I think there's powerful arguments to say social services should be responsible. So it could be said that today's decision, clarifying the law, so to speak, is still too conservative, and that the Supreme Court ought to be asked in another situation to look at this question again.
Might well be the case. So more room to move maybe. And thank you today for everybody for listening. As I said at the start of the podcast, this decision has been something that a lot of practitioners and survivors alike have been waiting for. And although the claimants didn't succeed in their case, which is very unfortunate for them, I think a lot of claimant practitioners and survivors will be very happy to see that the Court of Appeal decision in some regards was disagreed with. So as you were saying, Alan, a lot of cases that have now been treading water will now move on.
I hope so. I think that's the situation. I can see all those cases that have been treading water for some considerable time being progressed.
Brilliant. Okay, great. Thank you, everybody, for listening. As always, feel free to get in touch and request any kind of topics that you want us to talk about, or even any questions about this case for CN and Poole. There's obviously going to be a lot of differing opinions out there about the impact of this case. Unsurprisingly, that's what happens when lawyers read a case. They disagree about what it's about. So we'll see the effects of that. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HJ Talks About Abuse. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. If you would like to speak to Alan or I about something you have heard this week, or even if you would like to suggest a topic for a future episode, please do get in touch at aboutabuse@hjtalks.co.uk.